Chapter 5. Aeolith. The first thing that hit them was the stench. It was vile and unexpected, like wet rot, like liquescent decay. It permeated the cold, wet air. As soon as they had spread clear of the fumes from the howling dropships, it was all they could taste. The jokers ran forwards, fanning out across the slick, wet rocks. Some were gagging or complaining about the reek.
"Don't be babies! Get on with it!" Bronzy yelled.
He sniffed.
"Fuck me, that's awful," he said to himself.
The banner was up. The company was extending in a line away from the landing zone where the dropships waited, lifting spray from their idling jet wash. Bronzy got his bearings. They were in a flat-bedded valley between two lines of rock hills that were curiously regular, like plinths or flat-roofed towers. It was cold, but the dampness was worse. The air seemed wet, less than rain, less than drizzle, just a swirling particulate moisture. He could feel it on his skin like cold sweat. The jokers were already soaked. Capes had gone lank and armour gleamed with droplets. The sky was low and dense with squally clouds. The terrain was grey rock, a hard stone rendered slippery by the accumulating wetness. The stone seemed to have a natural propensity to split and shear in quadrilateral planes, forming blocks and steps that looked unnervingly like they'd been cut by a stonemason, rather than geology. Bronzy realised that the rock's planar property explained why the hills looked so much like cubic buildings. He'd never seen such a geometrically rigid landscape. It was dominated by straight verticals, hard edges and flat surfaces. He felt like he was standing in the jumbled heap of some giant child's building blocks. To the west, more dropships were whining down out of the cloud cover. Che signalled that the jokers were clear and Bronzy sent an instruction to the pilots. Hatches began to slide shut and ramps retract. The sound of the engines rose in pitch as the dropships prepared to lift off. Bronzy moved forwards through his extending ranks, mindful of planting every step carefully. Underfoot, the flat stone felt as spongy as bone marrow. Cavities had filled with black water, like rock pools.
"Some order, please, ladies," Bronzy barked at the jokers.
A couple of them had already slipped over, much to their chagrin.
"What isn't this?"
Bronzy roared.
"A fog-fingered ramble!"
they chorused back. "Could have fooled me," he muttered. Men began to call out as they pushed forwards into the lower level of the cubic hills. They'd found things. Bronzy went to look, and Mu and her aides followed him, stepping from block to block as if they were paving stones. There were dead things amongst the stones. Drooling black matter, putrescent jelly, and bits of bone and quill lay in pool cavities or on flat blocks. Some were as large as men, some as small as rats. It was impossible to tell what they had been in life. No real structure remained, no anatomy. Local xenofauna, Bronzy presumed. It was as if some great tide had rolled out and left strange marine life forms behind to rot. That's what the stench reminded him of. Beached fish, decomposing on a rocky shore. Mu bent down to examine a few of the congealing horrors.
"Any thoughts?" Bronzy asked.
"The brief said this zone was an artificially generated climate," Mu said. "I suppose these are the remains of fauna types abundant in the planet's natural climate. They died here as the air pressure and chemistry changed."
The aides had all pulled up the hoods of their foul weather suits and buttoned collars up over their mouths and noses. Bronzy saw the anxiety and revulsion in their eyes. Huddled in their hoods, they looked like a scolum outing that had ended up in entirely the wrong place. The Jokers advanced steadily into the hills, ignoring the litter of organic decay. Signals came in reporting that their supporting units were on the ground and advancing. No scan by eye, device, or sept could detect any contact ahead. So far, the humans were the only living things on that abyssal shore.
"Keep scanning," Bronzy called as he puffed and climbed up the blocks.
A man behind him slipped over on his arse with a hard thump.
"I'll pretend I didn't see that, Subo," Bronzy growled. "Oh, fug," he added.
Reaching for a handhold, he dipped his fingers into something slimy and gristly. He shook the gloop off in disgust. The fish gut reek was noxious.
"Is it turning out to be as much fun as you hoped?" Moo asked him.
"Ha ha," he replied.
They could see a good distance from the tops of the hills. A jumbled valley of grey blocks and glinting black pools fell away below, and stretched north into the shadows of a great dark wall of monolithic cliffs split by gorges. The scale of the Child's building blocks had increased. In places, they could detect the long white ropes of cascades falling down rock faces. At the feet of the cliffs, vapour gathered like white smoke.
"When you said precipices with waterfalls, I thought you were joking," said Che. "So did I," Bronzy replied glumly.
He checked his locator against the maps from the order packet. Moo did the same.
"The notation says they're called the Shivering Hills," Bronzy said.
"How long to get up there?" she asked.
"A day, if we find a decent gorge or vent to follow."
"Well, that's where they want us, so we better get going."
He nodded.
"Are you septing anything?" he asked.
"No," she replied, "but I'm cold and uncomfortable, and that doesn't help. This is a difficult circumstance."
"I prefer a good, honest war," said Bronzy. "You know where you are when someone's shooting at you. This is just getting creepy. Waiting for something to happen, that's just going to rack up the spooks. See what you can do to keep the men level."
"Understood," she replied.
"Jay," Bronzy called.
"Yes, Het.
10-minute halt here. Then we're going to head out across the valley. Tell the boys to have a drink and a pinch of peck, if it makes them feel jollier."
"Yes, Het."
Bronzy wandered along the rocks away from the main group. He slipped the green metal scale out of his pocket and studied it again. It bore a code, standard alpha form. The phrase, "Your father cheers, your mother cries, that is the lot of the soldier," had been written in Edessen to make it personal to him. He quickly substituted each letter for its numerical place in the alphabet, combined them, as he had been taught, and ended up with 2 7-digit channel codes. Bronzy clambered up a line of blocks to the nearest Vox officer and borrowed his field set. He slipped on the headset, tapped in one of the codes, and waited.
"Speak and identify," said a voice. "Argolid, 768, Bronzy said.
"Are you deployed, Hurtado?"
"I'm on the surface."
"You are not alone. You were given the code so that you could remain in contact during this event. Check in every 2 hours. We will inform you if you are required to take any specific action. Consider yourself on standby."
"Understood."
The signal finished. Bronzy erased the code from the Voxet's log and carried the device back to its owner. They left the drop pod in the clutch of the scorched rock that had caught it and moved west along a line of grey buttress hills in the wet murk. Roxana seemed to have recovered a little composure. Grammaticus believed that seeing him again had settled her mind slightly. She insisted on staying at his side and holding on to his hand. The foul weather kits were bulky and cumbersome, but they were glad of them. Stones dripped and every surface shone with liquid. The place stank of rot and organic decay. Sonica had brought a locator.
"How far do we have to go?" he asked.
Grammaticus took the device from him and activated it. He watched the display resolve and turn slowly, checking other readings.
2 hours, maybe three, said Grammaticus. We'll keep heading west.
Sonica looked at the chart display.
You know where you're going, right?
Pretty much, said Grammaticus.
The Imperial landing forces will be concentrating on the Shivering Hills.
Why?
Because that's where the halting site is, and they'll assume the Cabal is there.
Isn't it? Asked Sonica. Grammaticus laughed.
Pedo, the Cabal is as cautious about this meeting as the Astartes are. The Cabal is all too aware of mankind's propensity for shooting first, especially when it comes to xenoforms. Until the members of the Cabal are certain that the Alpha Legion hasn't simply come here with the sole purpose of exterminating them, they're not going to show themselves. Would you wait in the open for a stranger whose intentions were unclear?
Not really, said Sonica. They scrambled down a slope of loose rocks onto a series of wide cubic blocks. Grammaticus helped Roxana all the way. Every now and then he reached out with his mind and looked into hers in an attempt to monitor her well-being. There was nothing there. Nothing he could read. Just a blizzard of thought noise and panic.
So, the Cabal is staying out of the way? Sonica asked.
Grammaticus looked back at him.
The hauling site is just an inert structure, a series of well-founded platforms and deep stone pilings designed to support the mass of the Cabal's vessel when it visits. Alpharius showed us the scans, and there was no vessel there, a slight logic flaw that he didn't seem to appreciate.
So?
Alpharius should have listened to me, Grammaticus said. He should have come down here with me, instead of landing a full military expedition. I'm the passport, you see, Pedo, the matchmaker. I make contact, bring them together, and make sure both parties are comfortable. Then they talk. That's how it was supposed to go.
But Alpharius is far too wary, mused Sonica.
Exactly. He doesn't like unknowns. If he doesn't know something, it means he can't trust it. He likes to be in control all the time.
They ascended a slope through scrolls of drifting vapor.
On the other hand, the Cabal is very circumspect when it comes to humans, added Grammaticus. I'm afraid to say they have a fairly poor opinion of mankind.
Why?
Humanity is a young race, a barbaric upstart child in the eyes of the old kinds. But by the stars, it's vigorous and massively successful. It is spreading out and annexing the galaxy faster than any race has ever done before. It thrives like weeds and finds purchase in even the harshest climes. The Cabal has been forced to recognize that mankind is a serious player on the galactic stage and can no longer be ignored or sidelined. And, of course, they've seen what's coming.
This war you've talked about, Grammaticus nodded. A civil war. It will tear the Imperium apart. The Cabal doesn't especially care about that. What matters is that a civil war in the Imperium will unleash chaos. The primordial annihilator, the power they have fought to deny since the start of all ages, will use humanity's terrible conflict to gain final ascendancy.
They want the war prevented, then, said Sonica.
It's too late for that. They want the war won the right way.
Let's rest for a minute, said Sonica. The Uxor looks tired.
Roxana looked especially pale. She was trembling from the cold. Grammatica sat her down on a stone block.
It's all right, Roxana, my love. Everything is going to be all right.
She looked up at him.
Konig, she asked.
Yes, yes, that's right, Roxana. It's Konig. It's me.
Konig,
she repeated, and then gazed out over the misty rocks.
You know where the Cabal's hiding? Asked Sonica.
Yes, said Grammaticus.
We go to them.
Make contact.
We go to them, make contact, reassure them that the Alpha Legion means to listen, and then I'll go back to Alpharius.
Go back? Sonica asked, incredulous.
And bring him here.
He might just execute you, John.
Grammaticus shrugged.
I can't worry about that. This is too important. This is about deciding what the future will be about for everyone.